The guy claps his hands. The water stops and just falls to the floor. That was impressive. Good job, Crow, the man says with a disgusted look as he wipes the ash from his leather jacket. I watch as he walks out of the classroom, leaving the door open. Why did he have to open that sexy mouth of his and ruin the pretty image? I pull myself to my feet, just in time to see Miss Tinder come back into the classroom. Her hair is burnt off on one side, and if looks could kill, I would surely be dead right now. The rage has turned her pretty face ugly more than missing some hair ever could.
Get to the headteacher's office now!
She shrieks. Oh, shit. I go to leave the room when I realize I have no damn idea where to go. I turn back to face her and flinch at the expression on her face.
Where is that exactly?
I mumble.
Are you completely incompetent? Use your phone app like every other new student does. But I know... Butts, get to the headmaster's office, now,
she snaps. Okay, I mumble, rushing from the classroom. I notice the guy who walked through the flames leaning against a wall outside. Headmaster's office? I ask. He smirks and points left. Thanks. I quickly dart in that direction, praying I can find the place. I rush down several corridors, looking at every door for sign of an office. I poke my head down every corridor I walk by. After about half an hour of searching, I come to realize I've been had. The headmaster's office is definitely not this way. What an asshole. I smack my fist against a wall in frustration.
God damn it!
I curse, cradling my hand. Fuck that hurt. Stupid wall.
Miss Crow?
A deep voice calls from behind me. The same voice I remember from the initiation ceremony. I turn around and try to lift my jaw from the floor.
Where the fuck are they hiring teachers here from? Hollywood? Runways?
I try not to stare, but find myself ultimately failing. He looks far too young to be a teacher, so I assume he must be in his early 20s. His green eyes are bright and alluring, and framed by glasses that only seem to add to his hot teacher vibe. His smart but laid-back style clothing does nothing to hide the killer body he has. His shirt is tight against his body, showing off every inch of his hotness. His hair is brown and messy, in a way that just demands you run your hands through it. I can almost picture how soft it would be.
Miss Crow.
He asks again, pulling me from my inspection.
Huh?
I asked, is your hand okay?
He says softly, his voice filled with concern.
Yeah, it's fine.
I mumble, lifting my hand out and wriggling my fingers for good measure. I wince. Okay, maybe not so fine.
Here, let me help, he says, as he takes my hand in his...
His hands are gentle as he holds my injured hand in both of his. For a moment there is nothing, and then I feel his hands begin to warm. They heat up until they feel almost burning hot. He then releases my hand. I pull back and try wriggling my fingers again, tentatively. When no pain comes, I wriggle them more. Still, nothing. I feel flutters in my stomach that have nothing to do with the magic he just used to heal me.
Thank you,
I say, looking up and meeting his deep green eyes.
You're welcome, Miss Crow. I believe you are meant to be in class right now, are you not?
He asks.
Yeah, I kind of got sent to the headmaster's office, but I have no idea where that is, if I'm honest.
I explain.
Have you not downloaded the Academy app?
He asks.
Well, the thing is, I have no idea where my phone is, so...
No, I'm not really a tech-friendly person. Tech kind of hates me. Ironic, considering that I apparently have the technomancy power as well. I would have never believed that I would get that mark.
I reply. He smiles at me, and it takes everything I have to not fucking swoon. Damn. I'll show you where the office is. Come with me, he offers, still smiling. I nod my head and follow him. He slows down to match my pace. I look up at him from his side profile. He's just as damn hot from this angle, too. I can feel my heart slamming against my chest as he walks closely beside me. Damn, they didn't make my teachers like this in the human school I went to, that's for sure. I draw my eyes away from him and will my heart to slow down its beats. Teacher or not, he is way too unattainable for me anyway. Chapter 6. Kenzie. Sitting on a small, uncomfortable chair across from two of the three headmasters is not how I wanted to start off my school year here.
Mr. Daniels, thank you so much for showing Mackenzie to our office, one of the headmasters says.
He's dressed all in black. Black trousers, black tie, black shirt. It stands out in complete contrast to his fair skin and white blonde hair.
Yes, that will be all, the other, Mr. Lockhart, adds, adjusting his blue tie.
Actually, I'd like to stay, if that would be acceptable,
he asks, taking up a position sitting on the edge of a low filing cabinet, clearly not waiting for an answer.
Yes, that will be fine.
Now, Mackenzie, it appears you lost control of your firepower in your lesson today.
His beady eyes narrow on me, and I feel myself squirm in my seat. But, sirs, it was my first lesson. It was just an accident, I mumble. I try to look anywhere but at the headteacher dressed in black. His beady eyes are giving me the creeps.
It was many students' first lesson today, and yet they did not set fire to their classrooms, he replies.
Yeah, but they didn't have a teacher that gave them no fricking instruction. I bite my lip to keep in my retort, instead casting my eyes downward.
Mr. Leyen, we have had other students lose control in the past, and I remember one who destroyed the swimming pool. I believe all Miss Crow needs is training,
Mr. Daniels says, interrupting whatever Mr. Leyen was going to say next. They have a frickin' swimming pool here.
That may be true, but still, this is not acceptable,
he says, his tone frustrated that Mr. Daniels is sticking up for me. Even I don't really understand where he is.
Of course not,
Mr. Daniels says, his voice placating as he watches me closely. Mr. Lockhart is watching me too, but doesn't say a word, just sits, with his hands folded on his lap.
We have no other option than to give you detention, where I hope to see an improvement on your powers in 6 months,
Mr. Leyen says. I get the feeling out of the three of the headmasters, he is the one with the most power over the school.
6 months?
I ask, shocked. That's seriously steep for a little mistake on the first day. Just, you know, accidentally making fire tornadoes in your first class must happen all the time. I barely hold in a laugh at that thought.
Yes, we would usually suspend a student for an incident like this, but we will let it pass this once,
he replies, and looks to Mr. Lockhart, who nods his agreement.
Why?
I ask, my voice dripping with suspicion. I have a feeling it's because of my 12th mark, and that they want to know what it does. Don't we all? I know I shouldn't have said anything when he glares at me, not answering.
Mr. Daniels, you will take over detention every Sunday. Hopefully, you can teach Miss Crow some control over her powers.
Mr. Lockhart says, finally speaking, but it's not to me.
Frickin' great. The one day I have off, and I'm going to be in detention.
I would be happy to,
Mr. Daniels responds, and I look over at him, his warm eyes watching me closely, and his lips turn up in a smirk. Maybe detention wouldn't be so bad. I mean, at least there is a good view guaranteed.
He stands up and walks to the door, holding it open for me. Bye, I say to them, and they nod one after the other. It's a little creepy. I walk out of the room and wait for Mr. Daniels to close the door behind me.
I'm afraid we have missed lunch while we waited for the headmasters to get here. What class do you have this afternoon?
He asks me. Divination, I say.
That's on the top floor. Come on,
he replies, nodding his head and walking down the corridor. I catch up and walk by his side. There are a few students rushing around. They don't look our way as they hurry to their classes.
Tell me what really happened in fire class today, Miss Crow,
he asks me, his voice soft, but there's an undertone of concern in it that I pick up on. He probably thinks I'm mad after seeing me punch a wall earlier. Why do you think anything happened other than me setting fire to a classroom? I ask, and he smiles down at me as we get to the staircase.
Just a hunch,
he says, but there's a note of humour in his tone. I follow him up the first staircase, and then we go up the next. Miss Tinder didn't explain how to stop my power. I imagined a ball of flames like she asked, and then dropped it, thinking it would go out. I then tried to use air to put it out, but that only made fire tornadoes. I stop blabbering on when I trip up a step, and his arm catches me, pulling me close to his chest as he stops me from falling. Holy smokes, this teacher is way too attractive up close. I can see the deep green of his eyes behind his glasses and the smooth, faultless skin. How is he this friggin' attractive and my teacher? A teacher I can't just kiss.
Careful, Miss Crow,
he says in a whisper, his arm still around my waist. The sound of a bell ringing startles him, making him step back and clear his throat. We carry on walking as he speaks, and we get to the next set of stairs.
Never use air to put out fire. It only feeds it. Water would have been ideal,
he explains. I was going to call water when a guy walked through the flames and put them all out, I say, thinking of the jackass. I'm going to get him back for pointing me the wrong way to the headmaster's office, and for being a general ass.
This is your classroom, Miss Crow,
Mr. Daniels says, and I turn back to look at him. Thank you, I reply. He runs a hand through his hair.
I'll see you Sunday in the gym at 6, and not a minute later,
he instructs with a deadly serious face. In the afternoon? I ask, concerned that he is going to say the morning. He only laughs.
The morning, Mackenzie.
He says my name softer than the rest of his words, and he turns to walk away. My eyes drop to the amazing ass he has in his tight clothes, then up to the muscular chest and soft brown hair. Damn, this teacher is going to be the death of me. Chapter 7. Kenzie.
You are 10 minutes late, Miss Crow,
the old-looking teacher says. He stands as I walk through the door of the room. Looking up, I notice that the ceiling of the dome-shaped room is completely open. The open sky is allowing the sun to be our light in here. I spot Kelly sitting alone at the back of the room, with an empty seat next to her, smiling at me. Sorry, I was with the headmasters, I say, and the teacher nods. He must be in his 60s, with long grey hair and a stern face covered in wrinkles.
Please take a seat, and we will begin,
he replies. It feels like every pair of eyes in the room is watching me as I walk toward the back of the room and take the seat next to Kelly.
Hey, Firestarter. I'm glad to see you all right. I was getting worried. Have you done anything else I should know about?
Kelly whispers, and I smile at her.
Does ogling the hot Mr. Daniels count?
I whisper, and she chuckles a little.
Who is Mr. Daniels?
She asks. I go to whisper back when I hear my name being called.
Miss Crow and Miss Carwood, you are first on my list. Please come to the middle of the room,
the teacher says.
I stand up with Kelly, and we walk back toward the teacher. He smiles and gestures for us to stand in front of him.
Now, class, I'm Mr. Lindemann, and my speciality is divination. Divination is one of the hardest powers to master, and nearly impossible for most. The strongest of our people can only see a year or a little more into the future, so please bear this in mind. The future is never completely certain, nor is it completely clear in vision form, he explains.
We all know this, but I'm hoping I can see a little of the future.
Now, I want you to use your divination powers on each other, one at a time. Miss Crow, why don't you go first?
He asks gently. Sure, I nod.
Now, stand a foot away from each other and hold hands. Holding a connection to someone enables them to see whatever you see in the vision. When you are first learning to use your powers, recollection of the vision can be difficult. You will be partnered, so if you are unable to remember what you saw, your partner should be able to fill you in, he explains.
I nod and hold both my hands out. Kelly slides her hands into mine and winks at me.
Please call on your mark, Miss Crow, he says.
I reach into my mind, calling on my mark and envisioning it in my head. The divination mark is a basic eye design, but the pupil of the eye is full of swirls. I picture the swirls moving, a constant motion, frequently changing direction. The minute I call it and close my eyes, the vision takes over.
Kelly, the amount of powers you have means nothing to me. I've always just wanted you,
a male voice says as I open my eyes. I can't see anything, and I recognize the voice, but I can't place it. The room is black, and as I watch, two blurry figures come into view.
I can't do this. I'm sorry, but you're with them, and they have her,
Kelly shouts. I feel a tugging sensation that causes me to close my eyes, and when I open them, I'm back at the academy.
What did you see?
The teacher asks, but Kelly softly shakes her head. She doesn't need to say any more. Myself, eating a big bacon sandwich tomorrow morning, I say, and he nods, like he expected that. I don't know who Kelly was speaking to, but I have the feeling she does by the way she is blushing and looking away from me. Who could it have been?
Very good job. Now it's your turn, Miss Kerwood,
the teacher says, gesturing at her to begin. I watch as Kelly closes her eyes, and my eyes widen as she starts faintly glowing white. Actually, glowing. I don't get to look for long before I feel a pulling sensation, and I close my eyes.
Kenzie!
A man roars, his voice filled with both anger and worry. I open my eyes to see fire everywhere, and we are in the middle of the academy hall. I can see myself, standing holding my stomach in the middle of all the fire. My hair is covering my face as I look down at the floor, so I can't see my expression. I turn slightly to see a man running towards me, putting out the flames as he goes with water from his hands. It's the guy from earlier, the one that walked through the flames to put out the fire. He falls to his knees in front of me, just as I collapse into his arms.
Enzo,
I hear myself say. My voice sounds strange to me, but you can't miss the emotion in my voice. Why would I have any other emotion than hate for that jerk?
Not like this. You are not leaving me, Crow,
Enzo shouts, moving my hands and covering the wound with his own. Just as I watch myself pass out in his arms, I see him healing me, and he moves his hands away, lifting my shirt a little to show the closed-up scar. Was I stabbed? Enzo picks me up, holding me close and places a kiss on my forehead. Why is this incredibly hot jerk kissing me?
Is she?
Locke asks as he runs over, putting out more of the fire as he stops near Enzo, and Enzo shakes his head.
No, but that fucking teacher who did this is going to pay for hurting her. I'm going to fucking kill him.
Enzo spits out. The fury in his tone is the last thing I hear before I'm forced to close my eyes by the pull. When I open my eyes again, I see Kelly's pure light blue eyes open in shock. Her whole body is still glowing white. The light suddenly disappears, and she collapses to the floor in a heap.
Kelly!
I shout, going to catch her, but I miss. A wave of air stops her body from hitting the ground, holding her in the air. I look over to see Mr. Lindemann holding a hand out towards Kelly, air flowing from his hand. He gently lowers her onto the floor, and I fall to my knees, gently shaking her shoulder. I can hear the classroom whispering, but no one is brave enough to say anything out loud.
She will be fine, class. The divination power is strong for her, and this sometimes happens. However, I have never seen a glow before,
Mr. Lindemann says, his tone echoing the shock of his words as he comes to kneel next to her. He places his hands on her head, and I watch as he heals her, then moves his hands away. Kelly slowly blinks open her eyes and stares at me, a vacant look in her eyes, her expression violently bare of any emotion.
The portal will open,
she says blankly. Her eyes roll back, and then she passes out again. What portal will open? Chapter 8. Kenzie. Clutching onto Kelly's hand, I look down at her pale, unconscious face, my eyebrows drawing together in concern. I glance around the crappy excuse for a first aid room, mad that Kelly is currently lying across a few chairs rather than on a bed. They're remodeling the actual first aid center. Fucking typical. Kelly stirs, and I instantly lean forward and stroke the hair from her face.
Curls, sweetie, are you okay?
I whisper softly.
Kenny,
she mumbles. Oh, gods. She hadn't called me Kenny since we were 8 years old.
It's Kenzie,
I mutter.
Kenny, Kenz,
she mumbles back, a smile taking over her face as her blue eyes flutter open. Seeing the expression take back over her face fills me with relief. She's okay. Despite the healer's reassurances, I wasn't accepting the fact my best friend was okay until I saw it for myself. I sit back in my seat, allowing myself to get a little more comfortable as Kelly slowly moves into a sitting position.
Do you remember what happened?
I ask softly, still holding onto her hand and rubbing it soothingly.
The last thing I remember was you lying about your vision, and saying it was about eating a bacon sandwich, which kind of made me feel hungry.
She trails off as a mortified look takes over her face.
Oh, gods, I did it wrong, didn't I? I didn't have a vision and instead knocked myself out like an idiot in front of the whole class.
She whispers in a horrified tone.
No, Kels, complete opposite. You had a killer vision, and you glowed. You freaking glowed. The teacher was going on about how powerful your divination skill must be the whole way down to the first aid room. I glowed?
She asks, awe in her voice. You did, I answer, smiling brightly at her. Happy that although she only has two gifts, one of them is already proving to be so strong.
Not many seers glow, Kenzie,
she says, bobbing up and down in excitement. She is right about that. I only know of one other marked that can glow, and she has a seat on one of the councils. Kelly's parents are going to be so proud of her.
I know, it's so damn cool. How long have I been in here?
She questions, suddenly looking a little more concerned as she takes in the sorry excuse for a first aid room. I glance at the clock on the wall. As tradition, it's symbolized with the 12 marks rather than numbers.
About 40 minutes,
I answer.
Why didn't they use a healer to wake me?
She asks skeptically.
Mr. Lindemann tried to, but you woke for a second and then went back out. The healers decided to allow you to wake naturally after that. They suspected the vision exhausted you, so they were letting you rest.
I answer softly.
That's kind of scary, she whispers. We were holding hands during the vision. What did I see?
I go to answer her and explain the whole story when a feeling in my gut strikes me.
Nothing much, really. It was me and some other people. I think maybe in a class or something. I think that it was the fact the vision was so clear and intense feeling that it wiped you out.
I lie smoothly, shooting her a smile. She frowns for a moment, before shrugging and leaning back in her seat.
I guess that could be it, she says.
Must be, I reply. There's no need to stress her out about what she saw in that vision. She's already stressing enough. I can figure out whatever it means on my own.
You did wake up for a second and said, the portal will open. Do you remember what portal?
I ask her, knowing she might hear from the other students about what she said as they all heard.
Portal?
Yep, I nod.
I remember seeing fire and something blue,
she says, going a little pale again.
It doesn't matter. Let's just leave it for now, okay?
I ask, and she nods.
Am I allowed to leave? She asks.
Yep. Healer said as soon as you felt okay to, we could go. She did take a look over you while you were unconscious, and she couldn't find anything wrong. Just told me to make sure you take it easy. I answer.
Okay. Can we go back to our room? Or do we have to go back to class?
She asks, her voice a little wobbly. Room, definitely. Standing up, I reach across and offer a hand to help her up, which she takes. Once on our feet, we make our way out of the makeshift first aid room. I sign Kelly out on the clipboard by the door, so they don't worry where we've gone. We weave through the quiet halls. The majority of students are currently still in lessons. As we step out into the courtyard, I hear someone shouting. I look around, but I can't spot the source of the noise.
Up here, Kenzie,
the voice yells.
Up?
I turn my head up and catch sight of Easton hanging out of a window. A third floor window.
And he's about to fucking jump.
East!
I scream as he jumps. At first, he falls quickly. Then suddenly his descent slows, so he's floating down softly.
Air. East has an air mark. Breathe, Kenzie. Breathe.
He lands on the floor gracefully and smirks, the amusement reaching his eyes.
Worried, were you?
He teases as he walks over to us.
You may have given me a slight heart attack,
I admit begrudgingly.
You totally freaked. Were you worried about his pretty face being ruined?
Kelly points out, laughing at the mortified expression on my face.
Drop me in it, why don't you, Kells?
No, I snap.
You don't think I have a pretty face?
East asks, stepping closer to me.
I'm hurt, offended, and not at all amused, Mackenzie.
He says softly, danger lacing his teasing tone.
I never said that,
I stammer out.
Great. Now that was so smooth. So you do think I'm good-looking?
He asks, smiling even wider.
Smug ass.
No, I just meant that your face is probably considered pretty.
Hell, maybe even a touch feminine, actually.
You're not really my type,
I say, keeping my face as blank as possible.
What? You can't be serious. Feminine?
He sputters, running a hand through his stupidly perfect hair.
What? Shocked the whole world doesn't want to bang you?
I ask, smiling.
Well, not the whole world, but I'm pretty sure the female population of the school does.
And feminine is not the word to describe me.
Definitely not, he says confidently.
Well, not me, I answer. Why don't you go find one of those other members of the female population to fall at your feet, East? You may do better with them,
I retort. Well, I could do that, but I prefer a challenge. He winks at me and steps back. I'll catch you later then, Kenzie, he says, turning to leave.
Wait, what did you want?
Oh, shit. I meant to ask about what happened in your fire lesson, he says, turning back to us. It's already been going around the whole school. Someone said you tried to fling a fireball at the teacher. Is that true?
Of course it's not true, Kelly interrupts with a laugh.
Yeah, why would I throw a fireball at Bitchface? I ask, not really expecting an answer.
Then again, maybe I should have,
I add, muttering under my breath.
Then why is half of her hair missing?
Easton asks.
I kind of lost control and made fire tornadoes. Oops.
Oops, he mimics. Fire tornadoes. Why am I not surprised?
Easton chuckles.
Pro tip. Don't mix fire and air unless you want to cause disaster,
he says teasingly.
Yeah, so I've since been told, I mumble. Why did everyone else think of that but me?
Anyway, I need to get moving. Just wanted to make sure you were okay and that you weren't attacking teachers with fireballs.
Well, I'm fine. Catch you later, East, I call after him as he walks off.
The second he's out of earshot, Kelly turns to me.
That man is sex on legs, and you know it, she says.
Oh, I so do.
You know who else is sex on legs?
I say, wriggling my eyebrows.
Oh, gods, Kenzie. You cannot go after Mr. Sexy, no matter how sexy he is,
she replies and starts moving towards our dorm building.
Why not?
I whine.
Because Mr. Sexy is a teacher, and although not illegal for our kind because we don't even start school till we're 17, you know it's frowned upon. Your dads would freak for one, and he would be fired,
she answers.
I know, but he's so hot, like fuck me on your desk hot,
I reply.
That hot, huh? She asks, pulling a face.
Yep. I'm not seriously going after the guy or anything, but I will say this. If you want to be with someone, you should be with them, I say, my tone losing its playfulness.
You really think so? She asks, looking thoughtful.
Definitely, I answer without hesitation. You can't help who you fall for.
I think so too, Kelly replies, linking her arm in mine. Come on. I have snacks under the bed, and I know you missed lunch.
You're a goddess, I reply, linking my arm back in hers as we make our way to our dorm room. Chapter 9. Kenzie.
Now, class, because spirit is such a rare gift among our kind, we only have one class for all three year groups.
The teacher explains as she comes to stand in front of her desk, her long skirt swishing around her ankles. I shift in my seat and eye the five others in the small classroom.
No kidding, teach.
We're all sitting in a small semicircle, and sitting right next to me is none other than the asshole one minute and kissing me in the vision of the future the next, Enzo.
Great. Now, we only have one new student blessed with spirit this year. Mackenzie, welcome, she says warmly.
I look up into her warm, welcoming face and relax a little. Maybe this class won't be so bad.
Thank you, Miss...
I trail off, not knowing her name.
Miss Domet, she supplies for me.
But call me Stacy. I hate formalities.
Thank you, Miss Stacy.
I correct myself as I reply.
Fabulous. Let's make sure to make Mackenzie feel nice and welcome, guys.
she says to the class. I notice for the first time that I'm the only girl in the class, which makes sense considering the male-to-female ratio of our kind. For her benefit, let's go around and introduce ourselves. I'm Jack, the guy on the far right says, throwing a hand up in a mini-wave gesture.
I'm Steve,
the next in the line says.
Ryan,
the next says. Same name as my brother, I reply with a smile.
Ryan Crow,
he asks with a smile. That's the one, I reply.
You really don't look like Ryan's sister,
other than the black hair, maybe, he says. Everyone says that, I reply, returning his smile. Stacy turns to Enzo next and waits for a moment silently before a frown takes over her face. Lorenzo, aren't you going to introduce yourself? Stacy asks, her tone losing its cheeriness.
No, Firestarter here and I met yesterday,
he says, throwing me a disgruntled look. And here I was thinking we wouldn't have any classes together, I reply sarcastically. One could have hoped anyway, I add silently.
No such luck,
he mutters under his breath, but I catch it.
What is your problem?
I ask through gritted teeth, as Stacy turns back towards Jack to answer a question.
You are my problem,
he answers, thinking you're all that with your 12 marks. I laugh, not even attempting to keep the giggles in. Like, seriously, the guy is jealous about my 12 marks. I don't even want them.
What is funny, Mackenzie? Stacy asks.
That snaps me from my laughter.
Oops.
Nothing, Stacy, I answer. It sure sounds like something was, she says, narrowing her eyes and glancing between me and Enzo.
Just something Enzo said,
I answer.
That's kind of the truth, anyway. Yes, my little brother does have quite the sense of humour, she says, rolling her eyes.
Her little brother? You have got to be kidding me.
Little brother, huh?
I direct my question to Enzo, whispering. She's the only spirit teacher in the school. There was no choice but to put me in her class when I was marked by spirit. He answers, shrugging.
Now, I want everyone to tell me one thing they know about the spirit mark.
Stacy asks and looks at Enzo with an arched eyebrow.
The spirit mark makes it possible for us to see spirits that stay around for a short period of time after their deaths.
Enzo answers in a bored tone.
Mackenzie?
Stacy asks, and I try to think of anything my dad's and mum told me. My mum has spirit, but she always said it's useless. When she lost someone close to her, she couldn't see their spirit, and since then, she never tries to use the power. The spirit is extremely unreliable, I answer, and she nods.
Spirit is useful to find out clues for murders, Steve adds next.
Ow!
I say when I feel something poke into my side. I turn to see Enzo smiling at me, holding a pencil in his hand which he is flicking between his fingers. I go to ignore him and listen to Stacy when he does it again. I turn in time to see him use air to float his pencil back over to his hand.
Stop poking me,
I say through gritted teeth, and he just shrugs, looking forward.
Is there a problem, Mackenzie?
Stacy asks.
No. Crow was just flirting with me and graciously, I very gently, let her down.
Enzo answers, and I narrow my eyes at him as my cheeks start feeling warm.
Well, if we could have your full attention, Mackenzie, that would be appreciated, Stacy says.
Although she shoots her brother a look that says just how much she buys what he said. He shrugs at her, not the least bit bothered. I nod and lean back in my chair, listening to the conversation she is having with Ryan about how we can see the spirits of animals as well as people when I feel a poke in my side. I don't say anything this time, but I do glare at him. He only looks back at me, his eyes drifting over my body slowly and then looking back at Stacy. I don't think he is going to get a chance to save me in the future. No,
there's more of a chance I'm going to try and kill him.
How was Spirit? See any ghosts?
Kelly asks as I sit next to her on the table at lunch. My eyes meet Enzo's as he sits down next to a couple of guys at another table, and he smirks at me. Jerk.
No, but I do have a guy in mind to kill and test if I can see his ghost, I say, and she laughs.
Who? The hot jerk who saved me from the fire. He just spent 3 hours poking me with a pencil, I say, nodding behind her. She turns to look at Enzo, and then she laughs loudly as she looks at me.
Maybe he wants to poke you, she says,
and I glare at her as I pull my hair up into a high ponytail. He won't be doing any friggin' poking, no matter how hot he is. He is still a jerk, I reply, and she laughs.
Sure,
she smiles. The humor in her voice is thick. She doesn't believe me. A large hand slides down my arm as I look up to see Locke as he sits next to me. Locke looks amazing today, dressed in a tight white shirt and brown shorts. My eyes drift to all the muscles under his shirt that I can see outlined.
Hey, Kenz, how is my fire starter?
He asks, and I narrow my eyes at him as I pick up my sandwich.
It was an accident,
I reply, choosing to ignore his question, and he laughs. I freeze as he puts one of his big arms around my shoulders and whispers in my ear. His lips are so close that they brush the top of my ear, and I can feel his warm breath on my neck.
Guess what?
He says, and I struggle to swallow the bite of sandwich I have. Man, this guy smells nice up close, and the brief brush of his lips against my ear has given me goosebumps.
What?
I ask as my eyes look around the room and catch Enzo's. Enzo watches me and Locke, his eyes seeming darker than ever, and he gets up, storming out of the room in anger.
What is his problem?
We have water glass together next. I personally can't wait to see you in a bikini.
He says and brushes his lips against my ear one more time before moving away. He starts eating like he said nothing, and Kelly gives me a cheeky look. I did manage to find my phone last night in one of my suitcases I hadn't unpacked yet. The Academy app is really cool and has my timetable and a lot of other useful stuff on it. The water class had a note saying to wear a swimsuit, and then I was lost for an hour when I found the games.
I have to go, but I'm sure Locke will take you to your next class, Kelly says as she stands up.
Of course I will,
Locke replies, and she winks at me before walking away. We eat the rest of our food in silence, with me being aware of how close Locke is to me the whole time.
Come on, or we will be late,
he says, standing up and holding a hand out for me. I slide my hand into his. He doesn't let go as we walk out. Instead, he links our fingers together.
The swimming pool is in the basement,
Locke says as he walks to the doors of some elevators I didn't see before. They are under the stairs, hidden out of sight. Locke presses the button just as I hear the first bell ring. We get into the elevator, which only has one large green button. After pressing it, I feel my stomach jerk as it quickly descends. We reach the ground, and the elevator chimes. Stepping out, we walk into a massive room. There is a huge circular swimming pool in the center of the room filled with sparkling, clear blue water. The room has high ceilings and no windows, just bright lights on the walls. It's not dark at all in here with the pool floor lights too. On one side is a row of 20 singular changing rooms, and waiting for us is a woman with long gray hair. She smiles and walks over. The woman is wearing a black swimming costume, and despite her age, she looks good in it. I hope I look that good in a swimming costume at her age.
Please get changed and then meet us out here, she says.
I nod, letting go of Locke's warm hand when we get to the empty changing rooms. I strip down inside, leaving on my red bikini, and go to check my phone. It's flat. I know I should have left it on charge longer last night.
damn Academy game apps I stayed up playing.
Wow. I hear when I walk out of the changing rooms, and Locke is standing a foot away from me. I should be the one saying wow. Locke has on tight blue shorts that show off way too much, and I can't look away. His chest is firm, with a clear eight-pack, and I can see quite a few marks all over him. When I finally look up to his bright eyes, he is staring at me, and he takes a little step forward.
Class, come over,
the teacher shouts, breaking apart whatever moment is happening between us. I walk over with Locke to the other eight people in the room with us. This is a small class.
I'm Miss Betson, and welcome to Intermediate Water class, she says.
I wonder if I'm in the wrong class. Shouldn't I be in the beginner's class?
So, I would like us all to pair up and get into the pool. We will start with a very simple test. I want you to swim to the bottom of the pool and sit down. The longer you can stay underwater will tell me all I need to know. Pairs go down together, and remember to call your watermark, she says, and I nod.
You're with me, Kenz,
Locke says, his hand once again sliding into mine. I don't know why I don't pull away. It's likely something to do with those abs I can't stop looking at. We walk down the steps into the warm water and swim out to the deeper side.
Ladies first, Locke says with a smirk, and I laugh.
I call my watermark by imagining the shell-shaped mark before lowering myself into the water. I swim down and open my eyes. It stings at first, but I force myself to ignore it. I cross my legs and sink the final part to the bottom of the pool. I resist the urge to smile when Locke sits in front of me. He smiles, though, and bubbles leave his mouth. It's not long before I know I have to swim up for air, and Locke follows me. I take a deep breath and wipe the water from my eyes.
Brilliant timing. You were under 5 minutes, and for your first time, that is impressive. Now, everyone please sit on the edge of the pool. Mr. Valentine and Miss Crow, please come here, she asks, and I swim over. Mr. Valentine, I want you to make a water fountain, and Miss Crow, I want you to copy, she directs, and I watch as she swims away.
Come closer, Kenz, Locke says, and I swim right in front of him.
He pulls me tightly against his chest, and every part of me seems to stick to him as I place my hands on his shoulders. I watch as he spreads both his hands out. The water instantly rises around us and shoots up into the air and falls around us like a fountain. I don't watch the water, only Locke as he smiles down at me and then winks as he moves his head closer to mine. I let go of his shoulders and float back a little. The water falls to the pool as he moves his hands away.
Jesus, I was so friggin' close to kissing one of the sexy twins.
Well done. It is now your turn, Miss Crow,
the teacher shouts. I copy what Locke did by holding my hands out.
Just imagine the water going up, he suggests, and I nod.
I call my watermark in my mind, thinking of the water going up. Nothing happens. I feel like my power is doing something, and my hands are glowing blue when I look at them, but there is no water going up above us.
Stop!
I hear the teacher shout, and I give Locke a quizzical look, but he is looking down. I follow his eyes to see the empty pool below us, and I realize what I've done. I've lifted all the water in the pool into the air, and us floating with it.
Hold on to me, and let go of the water, okay?
Locke says as he moves closer and wraps his arms around me. I hook my legs around his waist, and he nods at me after a second. I drop my hands, and the water falls with us as I wrap my arms around Locke's neck and hold in a scream as we fall. The sound of the water slapping against the pool fills my ears as I keep my eyes closed shut.
Open your eyes, Kenz. Locke whispers close to my ear. I open my eyes to see us still in the air, hovering above the pool. Most of the water is outside the pool, and the teacher is standing with the other students by the changing rooms.
We are flying,
I say in awe.
No, I am, and you're having a ride,
he chuckles. I hold on tight as he moves us, and then slide off him when he lands by the edge of the pool. I hear clapping, and I watch as Miss Betson walks over to us as she claps her hands.
Very impressive, Miss Crow. I see Mr. Daniels was right to add Locke to this class to watch you, she says.
Mr. Daniels made you watch me?
I ask him curiously.
Yes, he asked us to his office this morning. Logan, Enzo, Easton, Stella, and I are going to be in all your classes until you have some control over your powers. We are the best at most of them. Mr. Daniels is watching you in the rest, except divination. He thinks you're safe in that one. Locke laughs.
I'm not a child, and I don't need watching, I snap, placing my hands on my hips and glaring at him indignantly.
They are just there to help you, Miss Crow. You have a lot of power, and if Locke hadn't helped you today, you could have seriously hurt yourself,
Miss Betson says, sounding reasonable, and it annoys me. Fine, I mutter, and Locke winks at me. Miss Betson walks over to the other students, and Locke steps closer to me.
You may not like having us all watching you, but I know you liked me getting close to you in that pool. I won't forget that.
He whispers and walks away. I can't take my eyes off him as he crosses the room to the changing area. The way the water drips down his muscles, the confidence in his walk. He isn't wrong, damn him. Chapter 10. Kenzie. I frown at the paper on the floor as I walk back into the bedroom from the adjoining bathroom. Kelly is a neat freak, so I doubt she left it there. I cross my room and pick the paper up. The letters MC are written across the front. Turning it over, I frown as I read the strange message printed on the back. Mackenzie Crow, if you want to live to see your life outside of the Marked Academy, meet me in the abandoned dorm building by the forest at midnight. Come alone, and don't be caught by the monitors on duty. There will be consequences if you fail to comply. A.
What the actual fuck?
I reread the message again and again, trying to discern what the hell this could be about, when I noticed the symbol drawn at the top of the note. The 12th mark. Shit, this can't be good. I stuff the note into my back pocket and pull my jacket on. I'd slept in and missed breakfast, having told Kelly to go on without me earlier. My bed was just way too comfy this morning. Or rather, I was just way too tired. I didn't get much sleep, constantly replaying Kelly's vision in my head, trying to figure out what it could possibly mean. I just know it's something important, something I need to figure out. Making my way from the dorm to my first and only class of the day, I'm relieved there is just the one on Saturday. Although, I'm nervous about this class more than any other. How can a technophobe be expected to perform technomancy? I follow the directions on my map app, surprised when it leads me away from the main building and towards the forest. I frown at the old, unused dorm building as I pass it, not able to shake the sketchy feelings it gives me. I continue walking along the edge of the forest until it thins out, revealing a lush green field filled with flowers. A woman whom I assume to be the teacher is sitting cross-legged on the ground, looking like she is meditating. Did I stumble into an earth class by mistake? A few other students who I recognize but haven't spoken to are hovering around looking as unsure as I am. Sit down, class, she calls softly, not opening her eyes or moving from her meditation position.
We all sit awkwardly around her in a loose semicircle. Someone sits closely behind me. I turn around and catch Enzo's dark eyes staring daggers at me.
"What's your problem?"
I mutter. "You. Thanks to you, I now have an extra class on Saturday, just because they don't trust you without a babysitter. I already passed all 3 years' worth of exams for this stupid class, and now I'm stuck taking it from the beginning again." He replies bitterly.
"Wait, how did you manage to complete all 3 years' worth already?"
I ask. "I've already completed 3 of my classes. I'm in an advanced class for another 5. He snaps. "What? Surprised I'm not just good-looking?"
"You're good-looking?"
I ask, forcing a surprised, questioning tone into my voice. He scowls and gestures his hand forward. "Just turn around and pay attention," he snaps.
"Sure, whatever. I'm just going to pretend that you're not here,"
I answer sweetly. "And I'll pretend that I'm anywhere but here." I hear him comment as I turn back around to face the teacher. The teacher must be in her late 30s, but she isn't dressed like it at all. A mixture of punk rock chic and hippie vibe shining through from her choice of attire. Her bright bubblegum pink-coloured hair is in bunches, with several beads and other accessories woven in with bright fabrics. A pair of aviator sunglasses sit atop her head, and thick beaded bracelets cover up both of her arms. She opens her eyes, and I'm surprised by the mismatched pair that stare right at me knowingly, as if she could feel my inspection. One eye is a shade of murky brown, and the other a sky blue.
"Welcome, class, to your first lesson of technomancy. My name is Miss Arthur,"
she says softly, her voice tranquil. Although she's speaking to the whole class, I feel as if she is talking directly to me.
"Now, I know a few of you must be feeling confused, bewildered even. How will we learn the basics of technomancy without any technology? These questions every beginner student has. Technomancy has a lot of misconceptions. That those adept at technomancy are all computer geeks is probably the main one. However, I am one of the most proficient in my gift within this country." She pauses, and I glance around, noticing everyone is entranced by her.
Other than Enzo, who is smiling slightly while looking up at the sky.
"I am one of the most computer-challenged people you will ever meet. I can't even connect my phone to human-run Wi-Fi. Thank the gods that ours connects to all marked devices automatically."
She finishes and smiles at the class, a dazzling white smile. A girl with dark hair, streaked with lighter brown, raises her hand from in the front.
"Yes, Miss Wilson,"
Miss Arthur asks.
"Then what is technomancy if it's not all computers? Isn't technomancy magic in tech?"
she asks in a somewhat belligerent voice.
"Technomancy is the use of magic in technology. That is correct. What you have incorrect is how you define technology,"
she replies, not the least bit perturbed by the girl's attitude.
"Can anyone here define technology for me?"
We all sit silently, nobody wanting to look like an idiot in the first lesson.
"Fine. Enzo, would you be so kind as to define technology for me?"
she asks, shooting him a warm smile that crinkles the corners of her eyes. "Technology is a means to fulfill a purpose," he answers, as if repeating something he's heard 1,000 times. "Technomancy is the use of magic, in that mean, to fulfill a purpose," he adds, in the same reciting tone.
"Excellent. Thank you, Enzo. Do you have any questions, class?"
"Tons." I glance around and see nobody else putting their hand up. "Nope. Not drawing any more attention to myself."
"Well then, let us begin. First, a brief history of technology and how technomancy has linked with technology through the years,"
I hear Enzo snort behind me. I shuffle back to the side to sit beside